John, I give for a reader.
Hi,
I'm glad to be here and I'm glad to be asking today. And I'm just welcome to the new people. And I'll just say, when I talk a lot about weight. You know, when I got here, I was 333 because it was the last number on the scale. E was the next number, and some days it would be E, and so. And you know, and I'd been more than that. I had been 350 pounds at one point, sometime before that. But the thing about it, the reason I mention it is, well, first of all, the recovery's come from this program, but also the other part about it is, I tend to focus on that because it's my story, but like behind that is just my obsession with compulsive overeating. Like the weight is one thing, but just the inability, I have an abnormal relationship to food. I can't, you know, it's like what I ate, what I just ate, how I feel about what I ate, and what I'm going to eat next. That's what the thing is. And it's all consuming for me. And it's, I'm ashamed of it, and it's a personal, isolating kind of disease in that sense for me. It's not something that I, you know, I think I learned, you know, I'm a compulsive overeater since I was young, so it's not something I just learned not to share that because it just confuses people, really, when you talk to them. You know, and they give you the, why don't you just, or the, huh, or maybe, you know, they just don't, like, if you don't have this disease, I don't think people understand it to the same degree, and that doesn't, there's nothing good or bad about that, but I just, that's how it is. And my story is, and also, I'm from Ireland, I grew up there, I grew up on a farm on the West Coast, so it's like, one thing I'm pretty sure is circumstances don't have much to do with my disease because I was overeating on a farm on the West Coast of Ireland in the 70s, and I was overeating living on the beach in Newport Beach working in a tech company, and I was overeating in San Francisco. And by the time I got to Overeaters Anonymous, which was 20 years ago, I was pretty sure if I moved to Timbuktu, I was going to eat whatever they had there. And I was going to eat a lot of it, and I wasn't going to be able to stop, and I was going to feel bad about it. So, you know, like, I really identify with the idea, like, the book I use mostly is the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and not because I surveyed all the literature and chose that. I was like, I came in, and I found somebody to help me, and that's what their experience was, and they just used that book. But the thing I really identify in that, even though that book's about, is the idea of this is a disease, this idea of compulsive overeating is a disease, not as, it's not a moral issue. Like, there's no decision I can make that's going to make, you know, on my own volition, I can't stop compulsive overeating. You know, I came here 20 years ago, and I was 30 years, and I'd been over, I was actively trying to control my weight when I was 9. You know what I mean? Because at that point, it was an identified problem, and my parents were like, 9, 10, 11, I was on diets, you know, or I knew about dieting. And I was definitely, and you know, and I talk a lot about, I've thought a lot about dieting. And I have had successful diets. You know, I've dieted off like 50 pounds. I've dieted off 5 pounds like dozens and dozens of times, 10 pounds a few times. I've dieted off 50 pounds. I've even dieted off 100 pounds. But like, if you think of over the course of, you know, 20-something years, that was a minuscule percent of the time. Most of the time I was compulsively overeating. And those times were exceptional when I could do those diets. And I remember I was in Ireland, I was on the Beverly Hills diet. and I got pineapple, you know, which was no small feat, you know, because that's funny. But it wasn't from lack of desire or lack of want. Like, I really wanted it. I wanted it. But I just was unable. And, you know, there'd be a day I'd wake up and I could go on a diet. And I'd go on the diet. And I'd be on it. And it was very good. I understood the boundaries and I could stick to it. And then there'd be a day I'd wake up and I wouldn't be on it. And then it would be, well, I'll do it tomorrow. And I'll do it tomorrow. And, like, all of my plans around food are in the future. Always tied to some event that isn't now, where it's like, you know, the Monday, the start of the month, you know, the winter solstice, you know, whatever, something which is some other pagan festival. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. As long as it doesn't interrupt what I'm going to put in my mouth right now. That was, and you know, that's just the nature of my disease. You know, I also grew up, you know, in an alcoholic home around alcoholism, and I could, you know, the thing with alcoholism is it's very baffling, you know, in the sense of you can see the alcoholic, the self-destructive nature of it, you know, and also the chaos that causes around them. And with compulsive reading, in some ways it's less obvious, you know, it's less obvious how it affects you, you know what I mean, and affects you. But, you know, now that I'm, you know, in program a long time, it absolutely is, it's as isolating, it pulls me away from life, and it does that. You know, and a little bit about my story. I grew up, I was overweight, I was ashamed of it, I was secretly on diets and there were ways to try and do it, unsuccessfully most of the time. And whenever I did, you'd get a lot of accolades and you'd get people would like it and they'd be like happy. And then they'd be silenced, you know, when the weight would come back on, they'd be just that kind of like, don't mention the war. You know, like just nobody would say anything about it. And then there could be years before I go on another diet. And, you know, like I didn't have a normal relationship with like girlfriends, you know, I had like one girlfriend in college for like minutes. You know, I mean, it was a short period, you know. And I look back and a lot of that was to do with me being overweight, but there was also people around me who were potential girlfriends, like that I wasn't in a position to be in those relationships, you know what I mean? And even when I was in a relationship, I wasn't even able to be in it, you know? There was just lots of, for me, this disease is many faceted, but I completely focused on the fact of whatever the number on the scale was, you know what it was. And the amount of shame I felt and lack of self-worth as a result, you know, like, which came first, the overeating or the lack of self, you know, it doesn't, and I don't know which came first, but they're completely tied together for me. But the thing I notice is, so I came, and then I also have a story which I won't go to about, I drank a lot, and I eventually, when I lived down in the I ended up doing a lot of drugs, you know, and I got in trouble with that, and I got sent to, ultimately, I got sent to whatever, a bunch of anonymouses, but they go, and I remember I went to an NA meeting, like I had a kind of open, I could go wherever, and I went to an NA meeting, and I never did heroin, but I heard this guy, he shared his story about heroin, like in a very good, like excruciating story about like his long journey through it, and he's a great guy, and I remember like, thinking, not that I didn't need to be in that room for, you know, I did some cocaine and drank it, whatever. I thought if this guy had, if this was about food, the guy just told my story. Because he had a long, many decade, hopeless story with constant go back, like always worse, never better, and constantly going back. And there was no winning, like in the story. And I just thought, and you know, pretty soon I found out about Overeaters Anonymous. And where I was with food at that point was I get up and, like, my eating was always, like, habitual in the sense of it was, I didn't necessarily even plan it. Because I started so young, it was, like, subconscious. Like, I grew up in the middle of all these farms, and I'd be, like, at the different houses at the different meal times. You know what I mean? And it wasn't like I was a little scheming kid. I just happened to be there when these guys were eating. And we were eating, and there were different times, and I ate a lot, you know? Because there's no convenience stores. There's none of that. So, and then when I went to college and stuff, I moved to the city and went to college. Like, I lived, it was a couple of miles, to, and I'd walk, and, like, every corner store, I'd have, like, a candy bar or a packet of, like, something in crinkly paper, and then I'd like go to the next one. So there wasn't like this planned binge, but by the time I got there, I'd eaten a lot, and that just went on, that continual kind of eating. And of course, then I also ate 3 full meals a day on top of that, and at least 3 meals a day. And the thing is, that was, I used to watch my dad, who was an alcoholic, the secret drinking, and always with the excuses, like, oh, I gotta go here, I gotta do there, and it's all this kind of drinking. And I saw that constant, I'm not articulating this very well, but like, it wasn't, it's subconscious in the sense of I felt I needed to do this and I would do that. That happened to take me by a store where I bought something that I wanted to eat, which possibly on the way back took me to another store, which, like, you know, so like, but, and that went on for years. But then the problem is when I got, by the time I got to Overeaters Anonymous and I was coming to meetings, it had progressed to the point where, like, I would get up in the morning and I'd go straight across the street to the 7-Eleven and buy a bunch of stuff from Crinkly Paper, and I'd drive the 8 miles to work, and I might stop, I might stop on the way there, you know, at another 7-Eleven. And then I would eat, like, whatever during the day. And at night, I might go to a fast food, and this is Harbor Boulevard in Southern California, and I'd go into, like, get the adult version of a Happy Meal or whatever. And then I might drive across the street and go in the other one. Like, I would never go in and buy, like, three things at one place. I'd buy one. And, like, who cares? I mean, I don't know. Harbor Boulevard isn't a very... Nobody cares on Harbor, you know, on the street, what's going on. But in my mind, like, it didn't make any sense, but that was my behavior around food. So what happens is I got here, and I just knew, like, there was nowhere else to go. Like, I've been to the pain ways, you know, you pay them, they weigh you. And I'd been to... I had done enough things and been on enough diets to knew that I wasn't going to be able to do it. And, like, this was the first place I found people who kind of I identified with and understood. And I didn't necessarily think it would work for me, but I absolutely believed it would work for the people who were sharing at the meetings, like in San Francisco, you know? And I believed that. And I asked one of them, I had talked to him on the phone, and he hadn't eaten between meals for 6 years. He had 3 meals a day for 6 years. And I literally could not, I'd been going to OA meetings, I couldn't do it for a single day. I was not able to have three. No matter how big the meals were, it was impossible for me. Something would happen where I would eat between those meals. So I asked him what to do, and he was like, you need to work the steps. He said, you need to have a higher power. He never said anything. The only requirement was it be a loving higher power. And, you know, that's a important part, but it's also... And that wasn't difficult for me, but it is for some people. But, like, there's lots of literature. Even the main book has chapters dedicated. They understand that that's not the same. But that wasn't a particular problem for me. But then I never really defined it. I just started to ask the higher power for help. And then I got a food plan, which was 3 meals a day, nothing between, no sugar. And the thing was, every meal is plan the last bite before you take the first, which is a real zinger on meals, you know. That's a pretty big thing, and I think this is never going to work. I'm going to eat all kinds of these meals, but I just started working the program because I knew, for one thing, is I was absolutely out of ideas. Like, I knew my ideas were whatever the scale and top number was that week. There was a new number that was going to be bigger if I kept going the way I was going. And like I say, that's my story is around the weight, but what it meant was just more days thinking about how fat I am, more days thinking about what I'm not going to eat, what I'm going to do sometime in the future, and more days feeling regret about what I just ate, you know? And so I did it, and, like, I did the steps, you know, that we read at the beginning. I did a fourth step, which wasn't too bad. I had done a fourth step before when I wasn't abstinent. It's a lot easier if you can involve, like, a lot of food in it. With no food, it was hard, you know. And I remember I wrote down the word "the alcoholic" and the word "dad" on my fourth step. And, like, you know, I have such a denial mechanism. It's an incredible denial. I didn't say, like, okay, I'm not working on my fourth step. I just closed the book. And I didn't work on it for another couple of weeks. And I wouldn't go back to it. Like, and I didn't... That wasn't conscious, you know what I mean? It was just like, oh, I had other things to do. And, of course, eventually I had to go back and do that, and I shared a fifth step, and I did all the steps and the best of my ability. And I did the ninth step, you know, where you make direct amends to people that you've harmed, and that was fun. I went to Ireland, I had a rental car, I was driving around all these little places making amends. But, of course, they weren't the hard amends. The hard amends were the more personal ones and the ones with... you know, longer the relationships that I damaged or, you know. And it's weird, too, because, I mean, I definitely have overt behaviors, you know, with anger and everything else that I had to make amends for. But, like, the harder amends are, like, I cut myself off from great people in my life. You know, I wasn't present for them, and like, they're not really direct amends that you make, but like, they're kind of, but they're amends that I've got to make over the years by showing up and being present in these people's lives. You know what I mean? And having a relationship with, and you know, like my mom is a good example. There's a lot of anger. There was a big hard thing to resolve with her because, you know, she's the one, you're too fat, you eat too much, you know, and there's definitely a lot of blame. But there's also this woman who had like an alcoholic husband and 6 kids, you know, and a full-time job as a school principal. She, you know, she wasn't idling around, you know, she had more problems than me. And like over the years, you know, we've got to go on vacations together, we've had a good relationship, and like, that's meaningful to me because in trying to reconcile the fact that she's not perfect, but she's, you know, there's still a relationship. That was an amazing thing, and that's a complete gift to this program. And I could go on and on, but, I mean, the main thing is I've been 20 years, I haven't had to go back. I've had 3 meals a day, nothing in between for 20 years, and I've been 130 pounds lighter than when I showed up here. And it's like, I'm married, you know, I've had a career, I have a job, I have, you know, a company, like all of these things that I was just a day at a time able to show up for and be present for just by putting down for one day, stopping eating, you know what I mean, and just sticking to the 3 meals. And the last thing I'll say, I could never have predicted what that was like from where I was. But it all had to start by completely focusing on that first day and just like, let's go through Monday and just not eat today. Okay, so, okay, thanks for letting me share.
We will now pass the basket to observe the Sabbath tradition. Over here, the money goes.